Well, thank you. This last hour might be tough for all jet-lagged Europeans, myself included. So I hope to keep you awake by addressing some issues in standard model physics and Higgs searches as seen by an experimentalist from CMS. So I will first preview on the CMS construction status and then focus on standard model physics and Higgs searches and conclude with some further remarks. And tomorrow, my colleague Ian from ATLAS will then focus on SUSE and other searches. So in this way, we divided somehow the LHC issues, not to repeat the same slides over and over. Of course, the standard introduction, it's clear that the program at LHC and what we can do with CMS is extremely rich, and it would be impossible to cover everything. So I try to pick up a few examples where I think, which I think are interesting, or where I think further efforts are needed from the theory side, from the experimentalist side. So let me start with the status of the CMS construction. This is a picture of CMS, how it will look like very soon, or actually mostly looks like already now, as you will see on the next slides, to remind you a little bit of the basic design pattern of CMS. We have one big solenoidal magnet, which gives a magnetic field of 4 Tesla inside a iron return yoke, which is instrumented with muon chambers, and this gives a very high performance muon system. An important point is that all our calorimeter is inside the magnet, a hadron calorimeter, and a very high precision crystal electromagnetic calorimeter. So a lot of focus is on the very high precision energy measurement of electrons and photons, and then in the inner part of the detector, all silicon tracker consisting of many layers. So again, the tracking gives a very high, together with the magnetic field, a very high tracking precision, up to 1% at 100 GeV, to give you one example. Now, as I said, actually, it looks like, as on the drawing, I really invite everybody, once you're staying at CMS, at CERN, please come and visit CMS and get impressed yourself. It's impressive to see these things before they are lowered. Once they are lowered down into the pit, you will not be able to see it anymore. Here, a picture of this is the central ring, and this is a picture of the trial test of the coil insertion. So the coil will be inserted in the vacuum vessel in the central ring here. And to give you a feeling for the size, here is a human being. Sorry?
He's a very trusting human being.
He has been there, so. Now, the C in CMS stands for compact, and that CMS is indeed compact can be seen here. So this is CMS, this is ATLAS, and this building 40, where most of the LHC physicists sit. And you see CMS is smaller in size than ATLAS, but much heavier. Actually, CMS does not even reach the fifth floor where the CMS management sits. So let me start first with issues on civil engineering and the magnet. The magnet itself is a very, very important project in CMS. First, this is a picture of the situation at 0.5. So this is 0.5 at the lab ring at the C. And here you see a picture of the main shaft, and to give again a feeling for the size, here is the being again. And in the back, you see the big hall, the back wall of a big hall, experimental hall, where CMS is being installed at the moment. And this is where this is the hall you can visit. Now the work has started to extend this hall all over this region here, and there will be a big plaque also installed, which then is opened and where the big pieces of CMS will be lowered down. Lowered down into caverns. Actually, there are 2 caverns downstairs. There is 1 service cavern. This is the smaller one, which will be delivered to CMS very soon. Looking this way, actually look towards the Jura to give you a feeling where this is. And on the right side of this service cavern, where most of our off-detector electronics will sit, there is the experimental cavern, which is much bigger, as you can understand already by looking at this thing here. And also, this experiment cavern will be delivered to CMS this year. As I said, the magnet is a very important project in CMS, and half of it has been done. Actually, the magnet will consist of 5 wheels, and these 5 wheels are being produced at the moment, and they are expected to arrive at CERN also in the middle of this year, and then next year the testing of the magnet will start. Now, the V, actually, magnet is a complicated winding of a complicated wire. You see, actually, there will be four layers of this very complicated wire. Actually, it looks like this. There is the, this is the only, this is the really superconducting part. These are the Rutherford strands inside aluminum reinforcement. And 21 units had to be produced, each 2.5 kilometer long. And this has been finished successfully. Now, as I said, the magnet is inside a reed magnet yoke, return yoke. And here you see again the pictures. All the metallic structures have been completed. So this is the barrel part, and these are end cap discs. Now, just a few slides on the subdetectors. The tracker, complicated system consisting of barrel parts and an end cap part. Actually, it will consist of about close to 10 million electronic channels. So basically built of these sensors, microstrip sensors, and immediately attached to the sensor on a hybrid that will be the front-end readout chips. This is all silicon, an enormous amount of silicon sensors. There's a lot of progress on the mechanics, electronics, and all the tests. The startup has been a little bit difficult, mainly because of this part here. Now it's going well. There are two producers for these sensors. We need a lot of them, so there are two manufacturers. Matsuo delivers very good sensors. There are some problems with the quality of the sensors from STMicroelectronics. The electromagnetic colorimeter will consist of close to 80,000 lead tungstate crystals. Here's a picture of such crystals, about 23 centimeter long, installed in a barrel and the anchor part, and in addition there will be a reshower. Now, there has been a lot of work going on recently in this area because the electronics, especially the on-detector electronics, has been redesigned. Here you see a picture of the new electronics. This will be one trigger tower, 5x5 crystals. And this project has really been successful now. A lot of new chips had to be designed in a very short time, and successful test beams have been there. So the electronics mass production and integration is starting now. Also regarding the crystals, out of the 76,000, 22,000 are in our hands. So the supermodule production is ongoing, so the insertion of the crystals in these structures, and also the photodetectors, more than half are already there. The hadron collimator is almost done. It will consist of two barrel, half barrels, and the end caps. So these are plastic scintillator tiles between bus absorbers. The onboard electronics will start very soon, and then this commissioning will start. So this will happen already this year. In addition, there's a very forward hadron collimator to give the best magnetic coverage. And also here, the batches have been actually completed ahead of time, which is something unusual, I would say. Now, the muon system, finally, it's a very complicated system, four stations with different types of chambers, and this chamber production is on track. For example, on the end-cap disks, there are cathode strip chambers, and 90% of them are already there. And the installation, as you can see on this picture, has started. So the CMS schedule, very roughly. So this year, we will get the cavern. Next year, the magnet test will occur, and the ECAL, at least the barrel part installation, will start. Then in second half of 2005, the lowering of CMS will start. The lowering will happen in big chunks. And downstairs, then the tracker has to come in there in 2006. And the last part which will be installed are the electromagnetic end caps. And then April 2006 to April 2007, all the commissioning has to occur in order that we are ready at April 2007. So these are the numbers. Everybody's working hard to stick to these dates. Now, of course, one of the difficulties is you have this enormous range of rates, and still you want to pick up also the event, the most interesting events with low rates. So a lot of effort has gone into the design of the triggering and the DAC. The first level, the highest level, which has to deal with the overall event rate of 40 megahertz times something like 17 events per crossing at highest luminosity. This will be the level one trigger, which is actually based on hardwired processors. And this will have an output, maximum output of something like 100 kilohertz. Now, the important point is these 100 kilohertz then go into a second level, which will consist of actually just computer. It's a big computer farm, where the second level of triggering will be performed purely software-wise. And this is important because this gives enormous flexibility in adapting to new understandings from already from the theoretical side, something unforeseen, detector side, and so on. So actually, quite complicated high-level physics analysis occurs at this second level trigger, or what we call it in CMS, the higher level trigger here. And then writing to tape will occur at the maximum rate of something like 100 hertz. So the event rates are just enormous here, even for this luminosity here, 10 to the 33, so something like the starting luminosity, we hope. We have something like 15 W events per second, or 1 TT bar bear per second, which gives 100 million Ws in something like a year, if this is accumulated within a year. 1 million TT bar bears, and of course, an enormous number of minimum bias B bar production and QCD jets. So there you have to only give a very small percentage of the full trigger bandwidth, otherwise you would close your trigger by just putting these things here. Even if you assign only 1% of your trigger bandwidth, you get nevertheless something like 10 million of all these events per year. So what is the baseline here? So the point to make here is that the statistical errors for many analysis, so for many standard model analysis, the statistical error will be negligible after a few days. So the issue is really the dominant, is really the systematic errors. And systematic is coming from the detector understanding, from the luminosity, from the theory. So this is the bottom line here. Of course, there are many performance numbers one could quote from the detector and so on. I decided just to show this table here because this is somehow a convolution of all kinds of performance numbers. Actually, this is the efficiency of the higher level trigger. So this is this trigger farm for some channels. And you see that at this trigger level, we have an efficiency of something like 70% for triggering on Ws. These are already very well identified Ws, or also 70% efficiency for getting tops, or close to 50% for Higgs decay, for example, to taus. So you see most of these important channels can be triggered on very efficiently, and this is only thanks to a lot of high performance numbers from the individual subdetectors. Now actually, what are the issues to be addressed? And I thought maybe the best way to summarize this is by looking at our master equation. And this is the cross-section we want to measure. Usually you have some selection, your selection gives you an observed number of events, you subtract the number of background events, you have some efficiency in the selection, and if you want to measure really a cross-section, then you have also to divide by luminosity. Now, if you look on top here, the issues to think about are, of course, statistical versus systematic errors. How do you design your analysis? What is the important error? The backgrounds, do you take them from the data? Do you take them from the Monte Carlo? Or is there other method to get the background? If you are looking for new physics, how do you compute the signal significance? What is relevant in computing the signal significance? Downstairs, efficiency. Very important thing. A lot of physics is going into the understanding of this efficiency. For example, very many searches will be based on isolated objects like isolated leptons, isolated photons. So you have to understand this isolation. Another thing is very often there will be a jet vector, for example, central jet vectors. So are you really computing these efficiencies for these cuts here correctly? Then the PT distributions at NLO for certain physics object like the Higgs will have an impact on your efficiencies. And often one can separate actually the efficiency in a detection efficiency times a geometrical acceptance. And I will point to this later on. One needs, of course, calculations for detectable acceptance in order to get lower systematic errors. Now, once you have the last parameter here, the luminosity, is it possible to reduce the error on this quantity? Then you compare this to a theoretical cross-section, which is a convolution of the PDFs and the hard interaction cross-section. There the points to address are, of course, how to constrain the PDFs, how to define uncertainties, and for the hard interaction cross-section, of course, the higher-order calculation and implementation in Monte Carlos. I think we will hear much more on this than in this week. Now let me start with standard model physics, and of course there's a lot of standard model physics. why standard model physics at all? It's such a discovery machine. You could ask yourself, of course, standard model is interesting in its own right. You should try to measure all calculable event rates, cross sections in relative, differential, absolute way. In order to establish the disagreement or agreement with the standard model, it's still interesting to constrain the standard model, do something like the electroweak fits. And of course, you have to challenge the theoretical calculation at the highest Q squares ever reached. And you have to demonstrate a working experiment with the well-known processes. You should not claim, I don't know, discovery of evaporating black holes unless you're not able to measure well the standard model processes, I think. So standard model processes are extremely important for understanding of the detector, for calibration. Of course, they are also backgrounds to many searches, and they are useful to constrain the PDFs, and maybe, as we've heard already, might be an alternative way to get the luminosity. So I picked one example from standard model physics, dark quark physics. It's extremely rich, for example, studying the initial state, the production of the tops, but also then the decay of the tops, top mass, width, spin, and charge, all kinds of properties in the decay channels, anomalous couplings, single top production, raw decays, and so on. Since there is one more detailed studied in CMS about the top mass measurement, I will concentrate now on this. This can be pursued in the semiotonic channel. So one top, the one W from one top decays leptonically. So the basic requirement is one looks for an isolated lepton and missing energy. Then there are two non-B jets, which have to be close to the W mass, and there have to be two B-deck jets. And one expects a statistical error of 250 MeV. Now let me remind, at production stage, at early low luminosities with 10 inverse femtobarn, one has something like 3.5 million tops. So you can live with extremely low efficiency, so you can cut very hard on your final states, and this helps in reducing the systematics. So since you have 3.5 million tops to start with, you can cut hard and you can still get quite a number of very pure top events. Here, for example, a plot of the top mass, reconstructed top mass for 5,000 selected events. Now, what are the main systematics? Of course, the knowledge of the energy scale for light and B-jets. A lot of issues go into there, fermentation, non-linearity is the underlying event. One needs very good energy flow. And then the B-fragmentation will have an influence on the systematics gluon radiation. It has been addressed in one of the questions before. To a lesser extent, backgrounds have an influence. And it seems from these studies that maybe a top mass precision of 1 GeV is achievable. Just to give you a feeling, this, if you feed in a top mass error of 1 GeV into the electroweak fits, this would reduce, I think, the error on the Higgs mass to something like 40% relative. So this is just the electroweak interest in general. Now, regarding a top mass measurement, one could ask, why not take it from the cross section? I mean, we have huge statistics, and this would give totally different systematics. And there is a strong dependence of the cross section on the top mass, as can be seen here. The problem is the uncertainty on the PDFs. If you have an uncertainty of 10% in the PDFs, this gives you an uncertainty on a top mass of 4 GeV, which is already much larger from this direct reconstruction. Another problem is the luminosity. If you take the expected luminosity error from this, from the total inelastic cross-section, one expects something like 5%. So the question is, can we do better here? So we have heard about this already a little bit, the luminosity measurement. Instead of taking the standard luminosity monitors, an alternative could be to use this W and Z counting as somehow the babas of LHC. And so you take the BDF and the hard cross-section from the theory, you count the number of sets, and you extract the machine luminosity, or what even better would be to normalize processes to the number of sets. So somehow to measure the pattern luminosity. For example, you want to measure W pair production, so you normalize this to the number of counted sets, measured sets, and from the theory, then you have to take the ratio of cross sections and the ratio of PDF. Here, of course, you are absolutely independent from the machine luminosity, and one could expect maybe that in these ratios here, a lot of uncertainties cancel out to a large extent, but this has to be then seen process by process. Now, once you measure the W's and the Z's very precisely, of course, this is also useful to constrain the PDFs. here I took a plot from a talk by James Stirling, which shows the W rapidity, and which shows which axes are sampled at certain points in the W rapidity. What I want to point out here is that if you really want to make the best possible, a very precise measurement of the luminosity or some parameter in a hard interaction cross section, it's really important to have the higher order calculation restricted to the acceptable, to the measurable acceptance. So the measurable acceptance typically is something like between -3 and 3. Because if you don't have this, you have to extrapolate to the full rapidity. And once you start to extrapolate, you get sensitive to the uncertainties in the BDFs at large rapidities. So if you have calculations for restricted acceptance, we avoid these extrapolation errors. Now it seems that for constraining BDFs, one gold-plated cross-section would be this ratio of W plus over W minus cross-sections, which is more or less proportional to U over D. This, in this plot, the lepton rapidity is shown for this cross-section ratio. It appears that even small differences in PDFs could be rather made visible in this ratio. And of course, another famous tool, standard model physics tool and PDFs tool, are direct photons. These are useful from a detector point of view because you can use them to get the energy scale calibrated. You can try to use them to understand better your photon isolation requirements, and of course to constrain the gluon and test standard model predictions. I took this study from a CMS note, which shows basically the rapidity distribution of direct photons and background included when you require that the jet is there also an event which is forward. That's why this rapidity distribution also peaks in the forward region. The point here is that the statistical errors, these are the expected statistical errors after 10 days of running at very initial low luminosity. The difference here may be to be studied further on, but this gives you a feeling of the precision we can achieve with this kind of analysis. So I have a first set of messages for you. Try to compute ratios of cross-sections or come up with new ideas or proposals for interesting ratios. And then normalize the processes to the well-known WZ production. And an important point to address is to how to extend this method to gluon-initiated processes. Then, as I've shown, I think it's important that the higher order predictions come up for the measurable acceptance, or what is even better, give us differential predictions, of course. Then we can measure and compare the prediction whatever we want. And for the direct photons, of course, it's important to get the best possible theoretical input, which is then also important to constrain the gluon. Now, another important issue, which I think has to be addressed a lot more, and which has been mentioned already, is the underlying event. So I took this plot from Rick Field. Here on this underlying event, we understand beam-beam remnants, initial state radiation, and multiple pattern interactions. So since Joey explained already what is this plot here, I don't have to repeat it. So this is somehow the basic topology of the CDF study of underlying event. The issues really are the modeling of this, related to minimum bias, multiple interactions, what is the importance, how to include them in the modeling, and really important, of course, the extrapolation to LHC energies. And my question is mainly, what is the impact of the understanding of this on selection efficiencies? And it is true that Rick shows something of 1,000 of plots, and I managed to choose the same one as Joey has already shown. But this helps me to not to explain it once more. So Joey has explained what is shown on this plot, but I managed to have something more, namely the important thing, the comparison with the Monte Carlo. And the CDF, they have tuned Pythia, which is then more or less by construction able to describe very well this data. And in comparison, the Herwig prediction, and this Herwig, for example, does not include multiple interaction, whereas Pythia does. So the CDF data shows some jet structure in the underlying event and interesting correlations between these two transverse regions. The question is, what is the extrapolation to LHC? For example, at CDF or at the Devatron, in 1% of all minimum bias events, there is an event, digest event of a PT heart larger than 10 GeV. If one extrapolates simply this using this Pythia tuned, then one gets 12% of minimum bias events at the LHC with such a hard additional interaction. So the question is, how good are these extrapolations? And to remember, at high luminosity, we have 10 to 20 minimum bias events per beam crossing. So this might be really, this, it will be important to understand. Another issue to mention is this Pythia tuning describes quite well now the underlying event in CDF, but not so well the properties of the leading jets. So this gives you a feeling that much further work is needed, of course, in this area. And just to show you one example, an impact on jet studies, I found the CMS note on this issue here. They have studied the reconstructed jet energy if they take simulated jets of 50 GeV transverse energy as a function, for example, of the number of interactions. So this is the effect of pileup and so on. And you see the reconstructed energy depends on your number of interactions, and it depends differently in the central and very forward region, and forward region is even more critical. Of course, if you want to have the best possible jet energy measurement, you have to understand very well these effects, you have to correct for, and in the end, there will be algorithms which try to correct for this from the data. But nevertheless, the calibration, the testing of the algorithms will be done using Monte Carlo. So you really have to make sure that your understanding of the underlying event and so on is well modeled in your Monte Carlos. So my second set of messages is that, of course, we need models and data for the understanding of the underlying event, and really we should try to learn as much as possible at the Tevatron, and then understand the impact on other physics, such as the isolation efficiency for many searches, impact on jet resolution, very important, the missing ET resolution. This could be really, really difficult at the highest luminosities at LHC. An issue I didn't focus on is the fermentation, particularly B fermentation. We should not forget that we don't know, we don't only need next to leading order calculation. At the same time, I think we should also not forget to have progress on the fermentation side. And let me switch to Higgs searches. And before I go into some examples for Higgs searches, I want to make some general remarks. These few of these things might seem trivial, but I think it's nevertheless good to remind you of this. Very often, or usually, when you're talking about significance of a search or the number of sigmas, one sees this definition here. So the number of sigmas is the number of signal events divided by the statistical error on the background. So if there's enough statistics, then you can approximate the statistical error on the background by the square root of the number of background events. If you have then a relative systematic uncertainty on the background, F, so the systematic uncertainty on the background is F times the number of background events, you get this expression here. Now you can rewrite this expression, and you get this expression here for the number of, let's say, modified number of sigmas is the statistical number of sigmas times this term here, which depends on the signal over background ratio. And of course, there are two limiting cases. The first case is when you're dominated by systematics. So when your signal over background is very small and you have large systematics, then really the modified number of sigmas is given by this expression here. So it depends linearly on your number, on your signal over background ratio. On the other side, if you're dominated by statistics, so you have a high signal over background ratio and a small systematic error, then practically there's no difference. So it's much better to look at numbers to get a better feeling for this here. So I took a concrete example. Imagine you have a 10% background uncertainty. A 10% background uncertainty on many searches is not just a big number, but it's something reasonable, I think. So imagine you have a search where you have 50 signal events, 100 background events, which would give you a statistical significance of 5. So you would claim discovery on a statistical basis, and you have a signal background ratio of 1/2. In this case, including a 10% background uncertainty, your significance is reduced to 3.5. Now take the next example. You have 500 signal events, 10,000 background events. Your statistical significance would still be 5. So still claim discovery. However, your signal background ratio is smaller by a factor of 10, and your significance, including systematic errors, is completely down. So in the second case, even more luminosity would not improve the significance, unless more data help to understand the background better, of course. So and when you see significances, you should always also look at the number of the signal over background ratios in order to get the feeling how important for this search, or how large the relative importance of the background is. Never forget this. So regarding the standard model Higgs, I basically take plots and results from a very recent summary note from CMS, where all the studies from the last years have been summarized. The first point I want to make, which is rather impressive to me, if you take the convolution of all possible production processes for the Higgs times all possible decays of the Higgs, now in CMS, I think almost everything has been covered and studied, which is more or less reasonable. So a lot of work really has gone in all kinds of channels. So not only the glue production, but also associated Higgs production, vector boson fusion, and so on. Now, if you take this convolution of production and decay, you get a certain set of signatures or channels. On one side, the two photon final states from different production channels. The issues here are excellent, really excellent detector resolution. You have to isolate the photons. You have to see how you reject the QCD background. On the other side, you get lepton final states, somehow the standard candles for these searches, either four leptons, muon electrons, or even taus have been studied a lot recently. Again, the isolation is important. You have to have isolated leptons. Momentum resolution is important, and of course, the tau identification is very challenging here. Then you have final states, you have a lepton and a neutrino. There again, lepton identification is important. There the background is an issue. I will say more on this later on. And of course, the missing energy resolution is an issue since you have this neutrino. If you're looking at associated Higgs production, the B-tagging is important. And again, there are very tough backgrounds to be addressed. For the Higgs production via the vector boson fusion, there it's important to have very forward jet tagging because the up to two jets will be really at large betas. And again, there's a very tough background. Now, basically, there are two classes of final states. The first class of final state is where you can really fully reconstruct the mass. This is where you have two photons in the final state, four leptons, or even BB bar. And usually, here, it should be more or less possible to take the background from the sideband since you have nice mass peaks. For the hadronic final states, of course, this requires an extremely good jet ET resolution. On the other side, there are final states where I have neutrinos there, for example, from the WW production, which then decays to the hadronic final state, or from the HA decays to taus. There, it's still possible that you have Jacobian peaks, so you can get information from the Jacobian peaks. The background is maybe more difficult to get from the sidebands. You have to look if it's possible at all, or you have to think of other methods how to get the background. And I will say a few things about other methods here. Now, let me start with one of the flagships, the Higgs decay to two photons. In the occlusive search, the signal of a background is 1 to 10. So the background is really, really big. But on the other side, the sidebands are very smooth since you have a mass reconstruction here. Nevertheless, in order to get this signal over this enormous background, you need extremely good energy resolution and very high efficiency to get all your photons in order to be above this large background. In this background, the important contribution is irreducible to photon production and jet plus photon production with final state radiation from the jet. Not in this background here is multi-jet production on some other reducible backgrounds, which are supposed to be a fraction of the reducible one. Now, one issue here, which is somehow a worry for people in the Higgs group in CMS, is the isolation criterion. This has been shown also by Sasha Nikitenko in a recent workshop in Switzerland. It's important to understand how to match the theoretical and the experimental definitions of photon isolation, especially if you want to compare the background to calculations. Not so there are different definitions on the market. For example, there's one very nice definition by Stefano or one other by Lenz. However, what is used typically in CMS and ATLAS is not what is proposed by the theorists. So one should see to get interesting merging, or one should see if one can find definitions of the isolation which are easily implementable in the experiment. Another standard search is, of course, the Higgs to two sets, which then goes to four leptons. This has very large signal of a background. So here you get very clear mass peaks for different masses shown here. For example, for the four electron final state, the studies have been performed with full simulation of the detector. But watch out, this will nevertheless need quite some time to see these peaks. the backgrounds are set continuum production and ZBB and TT bar. So again, the issues really are the lepton isolation, the tracking. You require tracks with no impact parameters. You have to have good tracking. And then I'm wondering what are really the uncertainties, for example, regarding the efficiencies on the thresholds you apply for the electrons and the muons coming, for example, from the understanding of the underlying event. Then very interesting channel is this one, Higgs going to do Ws, which then decay leptonically. Here the singular background is smaller than one. And what is really difficult here are the backgrounds, WW continuum production, TT bar production. They are suppressed by, for example, applying a central jet veto or lepton isolation, or using different dynamics in the singular and the background. For example, using differences in the lepton angular distributions. However, in order to understand this well, we need the best possible implementation in the Monte Carlos. Also important here might be the Higgs PT distribution, which helps to separate the singular. Now, to show you that this might be a little bit more difficult, this is a plot which shows the lepton PT of the lepton with the smaller PT when the other lepton is in this range, 30 to 45 GeV. So these are the backgrounds, and this is the singular. So here you see already the extraction of the singular is more difficult. You have to be quite sure that you understand your backgrounds here before you claim something. The important thing is, nevertheless, even if this looks difficult, if the Higgs is between 160 and 170 or so, this is really the most promising channel. And this is the channel actually where you will need the least statistics in order to claim discovery. It seems that even less than 10 inverse femtoburn could be enough in this channel, in this mass range. Now, since I said the backgrounds are very difficult, especially TT bar and TT bar jet, TT bar jet is more important if you go to this production. Here, I want to address this a little bit further. So take the TT bar jet cross-section at leading order. The scale dependence here is rather large. This would give you something like 40 to 50% scale uncertainty at leading order. So is there a better way to do it? And there's, I think, quite a nice idea of extrapolation. I think it's something similar as Joey showed in the W plus JETS analysis. The idea is try to get your background cross-section by measuring some reference cross-section. Take a reference cross-section which you are able to measure very precisely experimentally, and then take the ratio of the background cross-section over this reference cross-section from the theory. So let me focus on this a little bit more. So your reference cross-section, more or less you apply the same selection as for your search, but, for example, you leave out the central jet veto, you leave out the lepton bear cuts, but you require a VTEC. In this way you enhance a lot your signal, you get very low statistical errors, 1 to 2%, and then you look at the ratio, the prediction for this ratio here. It turns out, for example, that here in the ratio, the scale uncertainty is much reduced, only a few percent. So combining two things, you get something like a 5% background uncertainty. So I think this is a very promising method and should be looked at in other channels. For example, this one, associated Higgs production, a very challenging one with a signal to background smaller than one. This is TT bar, Higgs produced in together with a TT bar pair, and then the Higgs decaying to PB bar. You see from this plot, taking the background just from the sidebands could be very dangerous, and you have to think of other methods. The backgrounds are TT top and two jets, and the TTBB is really the dominant background after the selection. This has very large scale uncertainty for the overall cross-section. Of course, if there are additional jets in the game, then even the shape can change. So here one should study if this background extrapolation is also applicable. Now, another way to attack background estimations, for example, the TT jet background, could be to try to learn as much as possible from the Tevatron. Here I refer to a recent CMS talk by Regina Demina. This process here, the production and the initial state radiation is different at the Tevatron. But it turns out that the final state radiation is very similar, the jet ET spectrum is very similar, and the W plus NJETS data can be used somehow to study this contribution here. Unfortunately, the PB rate is too small at the Tevatron, but at least the top pairs with light jets can be studied at the Tevatron. So there is this proposal for the Tevatron contribution. Use Tevatron, for example, to verify Monte Carlos, tune them for this production, study initial state radiation on gluon fusion dominated processes, since at Tevatron usually this is the top arc. Top production is dominated by quark annihilation. and basically develop analysis methods, verify analysis methods. I think it's really important to do this in the future. Now, if you combine all kinds of searches, you will see this plot here. This is the peak sensitivity, the statistical significance. By combining everything, practically it is possible to see the Higgs over a large mass range, but you should be a little bit careful with this plot here. There are no systematics error included. So a lot more work will go into these different studies, and only in a certain amount of time, I think we will have a Higgs sensitivity, which we can take a little bit more seriously, I would say. Now, regarding the MSSM Higgs, of course, many things I've said now for the standard model Higgs are, of course, valid also for the MSSM Higgs. So I took one example because one big difference, of course, in the MSSM in certain parameter regions, basically for large time beta, is the enhanced coupling to BB bar and to tau pairs. And a lot of studies have gone into Higgs decays to taus. This I want to show. A lot of study has gone into these channels here. So HAs produced together with BB bar pairs and then decaying to two taus. And for the tau decays, they have been studied in a purely leptonic channel, in the lepton plus jet channel, and the fully hadronic. So this looks extremely challenging in the LHC environment. So you look for hadronic tau decays, so you have to isolate mini jets in the LHC environment. So since this is very challenging and one has to be careful, and a full trigger simulation has been performed, and it's quite amazing that quite a good standard signal background ratio is achieved, at least for large time beta. And reasonable blast plots can be done here. This for the purely leptonic decays of the taus, and this is for the hadronic channel. Now the backgrounds are Z decays. The Z peak is seen here, for example, QCD multijets. Other backgrounds such as DP bar or WT can be quite well reduced by vetoing a second central jet and applying a VTEC. Another interesting issue here is that if you combine these different decays, it might be possible to measure precisely time beta. But the statistical error will be smaller than the theoretical uncertainty, which is of the order of 20% at the moment, mainly coming from the understanding of the production. So some more work is definitely interesting here in this region. So the CMS roadmap is something like this. The first 10 inverse femto one should allow, if it exists, for the discovery of a standard model like Higgs in these channels here. Then more integrated luminosity at low luminosity running will allow the observation of other Higgs channels, for example, the Higgs to gamma gamma. And maybe one is able to already to start Higgs to measure Higgs properties. And then at high luminosity, it should be definitely possible to observe more Higgs channels, measure more precisely the properties, and really to start to answer the question, in which model are we actually? So the messages here are, as I said, isolation criterions and definition, theoretical experimental definitions of isolation criterions is important. Differential and analog cross-sections are needed for single and background, for example, as a function of the Higgs PT or the rapidity. In particular, most of your input is interesting or important for this channel here, since this might be a very important one for certain Higgs mass ranges. A very important and difficult background is this one, top and PV bar, top and jets. Here one needs, of course, higher order associated systematic uncertainties, or if it's not possible to compute them, maybe get other clever background estimations, such as this extrapolation method, as I showed, or another method is use the Tevatron and try to understand as much as possible from the Tevatron. Nevertheless, from the theory side, what should come is theorists should also tell us where is this Tevatron somehow useful for understanding these backgrounds. Where is it not? Where should one be careful in extrapolation to LHC? For example, for the color structure, which is different, and so on. And one further message, our physics TDR will come out in 2005, so a lot of work is going on now. So if you do a good job, I think you will get a lot of citations. One further remark, I think we will discuss this much more on Wednesday and the roundtable discussion. Nevertheless, I wanted to mention here, what I really hope that we can avoid from the very beginning is that there's not enough talking between experiment and theory. This will help to avoid, for example, improper usage of Monte Carlos. What is really annoying for me usually is the different definitions of systematic uncertainty. And the best example for me is that something like 10 or 12 years after a lab startup, an agreement has been reached, for example, for the definition of the theoretical uncertainty on alpha S from event shapes. So I hope that it will not take 10 or 12 years again, but many agreements should be taken already before the LHC startup. Maybe Sigi Bethke is maybe explaining a little bit more about this. Now, my summary, I hope I have shown you that CMS is really getting ready for a very exciting and challenging data taking. The detector construction is really at full steam, and you can follow the detector construction by going to this webcam here, and you can watch what is happening over there. So many studies have shown that CMS is well designed for addressing this program, but many studies up to now have been statistical only. Now we are entering really a new period of analysis. We are working towards the physics TDR, where a lot of necessary software tools are written. We're trying to understand the software we'll be using in the future, and now we have to concentrate on all aspects of the analysis. So calibration, systematic uncertainties to the detector, or theoretical uncertainties. And as I said, we need a good collaboration between experiment and theory in order to improve predictions, to validate the Monte Carlos. And what is really important, I think, from the discussions, what should come out is maybe invent new clever approaches where the standard methods appear hopeless. So let me thank a few people who have been in preparation for this talk, and also the organizers for inviting me. And the last slide, I want to show one cartoon. A few of you have seen this already once. It's a cartoon which explains very well what I personally expect from LHC. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. This is very interesting, clear talk. So we start the discussion. David? Actually, I have a provocative question and a technical question. I'll start with a technical question, maybe come back to the provocative one later. For the underlying event, do you know exactly what combination of sort of beam remnant and multiple interactions, other contributions are in the fit that was done in the plot you showed?
Which was in which fit?
You showed the Pythia fit to CDF data.
Maybe there, Joey can right. Answer if it's a CDF fit. So.
Pythia has a lot more parameters to tune than Hurwitz. Hurwitz basically comes out of the box. But one of the main things that is adjusted is the tune in the double quantum status.
My comment was then that presumably they are not very reliable to extrapolate this model to LHC energy.
You mean reliable in the comparison to the Tevatron or extrapolate?
Yeah, if you fit to the Tevatron this model, I wouldn't trust that the LHC energy.
For example, that the study that I showed, you know, from round one, the paper actually has comparisons both at 630 and 1800 GeV. The extrapolation from 630 to 1800 GeV doesn't work.
No, we talked about it.
I wouldn't quite leave that impression. If you use the multiple interaction on the line event model, then you can sort of get some consistency between 630 and 1800. I would say that you can sort of get some. More of a worrying thing to me is not so much about the extrapolation, but what's the state of the model? The real issue is whether the Monte Carlo models that are available for the following year or not yet will be able to continue to agree with the behavior of the regional policy. If they can be, then you don't have a problem. Yeah. But if it turns out the models are in some way too restrictive, and so there's no way that they're promised to be able to meet the gains, then we have to quit.
Just to give you a feeling for the size, I think I asked the guy who is doing the HA to tau tau analysis. Apparently, once more or less by mistake, he switched to a different setting of the minimum by underlying event modeling from the standard picture to some other tuning, and immediately there was 10% difference in efficiency for the tau. So this is the order of magnitude which you immediately get, and yeah, if you're not able...
Well, we saw another effect which is actually somewhat worse than that, in the tau. It wasn't just an efficiency problem, there's also a problem with the resolution of the reconstructed image, which depends on the ECDT resolution of the glass, which is very sensitive to the underlying bit. The more noise, particularly if you've got fire, but the more stuff you've got, the more fluctuations in that stuff you can have. And the effect of that is to smear out something like this. So you have to be careful when, in fact, when somebody shows you something like this. You have to be very careful because often you'll see two plots and they'll say, oh, this is the way with an apple spot, they don't have any lighting change. But they may have the logs, they may be using a different underlying compile of events. It's very important, I'm sure, but that's the difference, they're not very different to the form of the event.
Yeah.
Now so that you have a provocative question.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, it should so happen that when you turn on the ECDT today by 12 to 18 months,
I'm sure we would not be sitting around and waiting. So as you have seen, a few sub-detectors are really on the critical path, so definitely it will be up to in the schedule up as it is now is really at the limit. So if there's some more time, it will be definitely useful to, for example, to have more time for the commissioning. At the moment, the commissioning is already rather stretched. So if you have more time, you will do a lot of more commissioning of the DAQ and so on, for example. And maybe install things you maybe did not manage to install in the first place. Yes?
There are some components in Atlas that are still in the case. I'm sure they have one. If there's a delay, then some of those stages of
I wanted to make one to comment. I forgot in the talk since there was a discussion how quickly one will see certain things at the LHC, then which will help maybe the decisions for other machines and so on. Be careful. I mean, the understanding of the detector will take time. I mean, this will not be from in a few weeks that we will understand the detector and immediately claim important things on. So remember that it will take time until very good data come out. This I'm quite convinced. A lot of things have to be learned there.
Joey?
So I'm all in favor of normalizing cross-sections to the W cross-section. Both Gary and I talked about in our talks with the Pevatron. But I think it might be dangerous to try to use the, say, W and Z cross-sections to determine a partonic luminosity. I think that's safer done in the context of a next to leading order global analysis, you know, or by the time of the LHC, probably a next and next to leading order global analysis. You know, as the data becomes available, you know, from the Pevatron and from the early days of the LHC, all of that's going to go into, you know, CTEC MRST fitting packages. And I think they're better able to deal with the correlations between the mixing, the partonic sub-processes that occur at next to leading order. Next to leading order, instead of trying to sort that out by hand.
I think you're right. I mean, the best possible input from the BDF is of course important. Still, I think there's nothing speaks against, for example, measuring processes, for example, initiated mainly by quarks relative to the Z production, because, I mean, you have to take the ratio from this here, and if this here is well understood, BDFs and the hard cross-section, the better, because there you can do a lot in reducing systematic error. On the luminosity from the standard method, maybe you don't have a lot of hands.
No, I agree. You know, but you're normalizing to the W cross section, not to the partonic luminosity.
Okay, if you want to put it like this.
So please.
What kind of handle do you have for BJET energy scale?
BJET energy scale. I mean, it's basically the jet energy scale, which, for example, take jet plus photon. And the photon you can measure very precisely, and if they are back-to-back, you can try to get energy corrections for the jet. And for the B-jet, I think should go a similar way. Although, yeah. But I guess for the moment, for example, I think to start with the uncertainty on the jet energy scale from the detector, I think are larger than the systematics from the B fermentation to start with. This I'm quite sure. The uncertainties on the jet energy scale in the very beginning something like 10 to 15% or so. This is larger than systematic and certainly from B fermentation.
So any further question or comment? Maybe I have a question still, that the new Higgs analysis was done with next reading of the cross-sections.
Which new?
What you shown for the CMS report at the end of the talk, the signal significance curves for the Higgs discovery.
Depends on certain channels. For the WW and gamma-gamma, this included the K factors, also for the ZZ to leptons.
Yeah, and the simplest case, I mean, more complicated.
But for the backgrounds, not everywhere the K factors.
So my question then would be that there was some change in the leading order analysis compared to the previous numbers.
Oh, I could not tell you the size of the changes.
Because one would expect that the significance goes up with the...
In most of the channels, I think it should have gone up. I don't know by how much. I mean, it's 10 or 20% or so.
So any more questions? Then thanks very much again. And I repeat.